John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and bring in our friend Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic. Nicole, what's going on? How you doing?
Hey, just hanging in there. I'm in Chicago and we are under a stay-at-home advisory. So trying to mentally process that and then figure out how to get through the winter.
Well, Nicole, before we get started, we're going to get hot and heavy into some COVID news in college football. But I do have to say, this is the first time we've had you on the show since the time change here in our country. And we are very much proponents of dad jokes here on this show. And I have to say, the dad joke from your father and the text message you shared about the hour back of your last name and the
holiday,
hour back that we moved, the holiday that it is for your family, I laughed for a good 35 minutes. So thank you for sharing that with us.
You're welcome. Now, just when it gets really dark at 4:30, just don't blame us. But, you know, we get our one day, our holiday, the joke's in. But then when it gets dark, you got to disassociate that with the good.
I totally missed this. When was this?
When the time changed and you moved the clock an hour back. Yeah.
You get an extra hour. It's an hour back holiday.
Get an hour back. Holiday. Okay. I like it. Yeah.
It's very good.
It is very good.
That's near the top of the list.
Ultimate dad joke.
That's an outstanding. That's a Hall of Fame dad
it
joke.
It really is. It's very good. Nicole, obviously COVID cases and contact tracing running rampant through college football and really our country as a whole right now. What sort of an impact could this have on maybe the schedule moving forward and specifically maybe with the college football playoff?
Well, I mean, I think we're just going to have to brace for the next 4 or 5 weeks what we're going through right now, where there's a lot of cancellations, a lot of postponements. I think you're going to see in some of these leagues that had, you know, that have that open date, people are going to have to prioritize the games that you want to get in that have to do with divisional races over, you know, just whatever got canceled early in the season that you said you could make up on December 12th, right? I think you're going to have to prioritize. But, you know, I just think everyone's focused on that December 19th finish line. And, you know, we're already enduring and playing through disruptions. And, you know, it's not that far off. The one thing I keep trying to harp on people, you know, based on conversations is there's no reason and there's no momentum for, you know, expanding or lengthening the regular season to get a couple more regular season games in. People keep saying that because they see these cancellations or, you know, you see it in the Pac-12 and, you know, they're not going to get that many games in the first place. But there's no benefit to adding weeks and adding regular season games to get them in. The point here is to get the playoff, crown a champion, get the CFP money. I mean, this is not about at this point, you know, everyone's, yes, there's inventory, certain amount of games you're trying to get in, but at this point you just want to get to the finish line. So there's no real benefit in extending a couple weeks to try to get Alabama from 9 games to 10. It's not going to make a difference. And, you know, COVID, the outbreaks are so bad everywhere. It's not going to get better. It's not like February is going to be better than January in terms of a pandemic and the winter. So really, I think when you think about what adjustments there could be for the CFP, I think the way to think about it is, okay, when they have their four teams set, if there's an outbreak on one of those teams, then they'll adjust. But they're not going to voluntarily push everything back a month just to get in some regular season games.
So in terms of, because first of all, like there's going to be obviously a different number of games. We already knew that, even if everyone was able to get in every game. But let's say it's, you know, the Big Ten obviously is a higher standard. It's possible that, you know, some more of these games could be lost. Like, let's say Ohio State has a really low number of games, but they look exactly like, I guess the question is there any I guess, bar that's you come in below it and the committee looks at you in a different way? Or is it just like, well, that's Ohio State? I mean, frankly, I hope they look at them and say, well, it's Ohio State and we all want to watch them in the playoff. But do you think that, you know, if the argument from like the SEC is, well, we played 10 games and you played 4, like, how is that fair? Do you think right. there's any factor at all, any discussion at all in that room along those lines?
Well, I mean, yes. You know, I had thought, and to my knowledge to this point, they haven't set a minimum. You know, there were conversations or examples being thrown around of like, okay, well, what if, you know, you have to play 6 games to qualify for a New Year's 6 game or the playoff or whatever it is. But I think, you know, at this point, you know, I do think when you have, you know, human on the selection committee, you can just say to them, evaluate, right? Like, you figure out, you know, how strong a different resume is, what your personal comfort level is and what you've seen from these teams, because, you know, that's kind of why you have, you know, a subjective selection committee. And I think, you know, honestly, like, if they could say tomorrow, they could say, okay, here are, you're going to take Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, and then you pick the 4th spot. Like, honestly, that's probably not going to change that much, like, for as difficult as the 4th spot's going to end up being. So, again, I've always said, you know, you just kind of need to be in the same ballpark as everyone else. If you're, you know, Ohio State or the Big Ten champ, if it's not them, shout out to Indiana. I just think that, like, ultimately, if you're in the same ballpark, you're okay. You know, because, again, we're all going to get used to it. Everyone's so caught up on the amount of games everyone's played. But everyone needs to kind of just stop thinking about it that way and just think about, you know, as long as you're in the same ballpark as each other, then you just evaluate as you normally would. It's more subjective than ever this year. But I think all of us understand and have a really good grasp of, we know there's 3 teams that are going to be in this thing unless something crazy happens. So, again, as long as they get in the same ballpark, the selection committee is probably going to see it the same way we do.
Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Nicole, what's been more surprising in the Big Ten to you? How good Indiana has been or how bad Michigan has been?
Probably how bad Michigan has been, and Penn State, too, because, you know, we're not used to seeing those two programs combined for one win, you know, this many weeks into a season. But, you know, Indiana, I think you saw all the signs of growth and momentum from last season. You knew that a lot of those young, talented guys were coming back. You could see the confidence growing. You knew that they were really close to getting one of those wins over a Big Ten East team, which obviously now they have a bunch. But I think the Michigan question, especially, there was so much, you know, energy around Joe Milton, you know, in camp and him winning the job and Dylan McCaffrey leaving. And then, you know, you see week one. I honestly blame Minnesota for a lot of this because I don't think anyone right. expected such a drop-off from them. So that really, you know, just messed with our calibration of what we thought Michigan was. So you know, I just think, you know, at this point you're seeing them hit new lows. And I've been saying this all week, but, like, I covered the Rich Rod era at Michigan. That was when I was a student. There were a lot of historic lows during that stretch. And to see new ones reached with Jim Harbaugh, the white whale that this fan base had always wanted to coach, like, that is what is incredibly jarring this far into his tenure.
So was he the coach at Michigan in 2021?
Well, I don't think so. It feels like the end. It feels like there's no other way out here, but it's going to have to be massaged. I mean, you're going to have to figure out a way to say, like, hey, nudge, nudge, we're not going to extend you, and obviously your contract's supposed to be up next year. Hey, why don't we look for a parachute in the NFL? You know, like, it's going to have to be a civil, peaceful departure. Like, it's not a normal, you know, I was comparing this to, like, Tom Herman in Texas, right, where that's just normal, right? If you make a coaching change and you just fire someone and you pay their buyout, it's not like that at Michigan when it's someone like this, like, that you've kind of put all your eggs in the basket. It's your dream hire and it didn't work. You gotta finesse it. And so if that can be done, I think Michigan absolutely has to do that. You know, the fan base is so just, it's not even like angry anymore. It's just so deflated. And it's just so, you know, we're just, you know, why do I even watch this on Saturdays, right? That's the worst phase of a fan base when you're going through something where you know you need to make a change, when the energy is just not there. You're not even, can't even get yourself worked up enough to be angry and disappointed in a loss like Saturdays.
Well, and then one thing, it's funny because I was thinking about this, and you've been in that stadium many times, Nicole. Like, what? It's a good year, you know, for no fans in that stadium in terms of that performance. Yeah. That would have been like record-breaking boos, right, in that place.
Yeah, it would have. And again, I was there during the Rich Rod tenure, and there were a lot of home crowd boos during that era. And you know, it is kind of crazy that you know you think about that dynamic and the optics and challenge, and you know. There was the cardboard cutout of the, you know, of the surrender cobra and the, you know, at the end of the Michigan State game a couple years ago where, you know, just that all-timer. First of all, I need to know who paid for that. $75 to get those cardboard cutouts. Amazing. I don't know if it was a Michigan State fan. Probably was a Michigan fan. Like, again, they're so over this. But that's all you could cut to. You know, like, right. It was like, okay, two interceptions. We can cut to this cardboard cutout. But yeah, it absolutely would have been just cascading boos at halftime, at the end of the game. I mean, it would have been exactly what we're talking about, but you know, we are missing that, just that one dynamic, which always, again, tells you a lot about, you know, a coach and their trajectory when your home crowd that's paying all this money to go to these games is booing you.
Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nicole, last thing for you here. It's interesting to kind of evaluate the Heisman race this year. You've got Trevor Lawrence missed a couple games with COVID. Justin Fields and Ohio State just now getting underway a couple weeks ago. Different kind of measurements and different bars that you have to judge for what you want to give the Heisman to. As you evaluate the process, is this going to be the most difficult year you can remember to kind of determine who the Heisman Trophy winner is going to be? And if you had to pick a favorite right now, who would you pick?
Yeah, I do think it's going to be challenging. It's kind of like for the same reason we were talking about earlier with the college football playoff. Like, I think people need to unwire their brains a little bit, because I think like in the past you're like, oh, someone got injured or missed a few games, like they're out, right? They didn't play the full season. But no one's playing the same amount of games anyway, so like you just need to kind of forget about that. Like, there's a reason that Justin Fields immediately became a front runner, right? Like, we knew what we were getting out of him, and then we saw it. So I still think, you know, it's probably him. It's probably guys like, you know, you're hoping, you know, Kyle Pitts is healthy. I always love getting guys that aren't quarterbacks into the mix for this award. So, you know, I do think that you've got to get more creative. Like, I really hope that Zach Wilson from BYU is a finalist. Like, there's no reason that he shouldn't be, unless people aren't, you know, comfortable thinking outside of the box or going with someone like that, maybe based on their quality of their opponent, which is outside of his own control. Like, they're lucky they had a season at all. They're an independent. They had to put together whatever schedule they could. So I think people just need to, like, stop thinking about it the same way we always do, which is, you know, okay, the best quarterback on a playoff-caliber team. And just think about it like, okay, you know, as long as people played, you know, enough games that, you know, you feel like they played a season, you know, who are the best players? Who are the most talented players in the country? And Trevor Lawrence should be there. Even if he missed a couple of games, he's still going to finish with more games than Justin Fields gets in. Like, you know, you just kind of got to – I've seen people already getting harp, you know, getting caught up on these things. And it's just you got to let that go this year and really just, again, be extra subjective. Like, you know, we're watching football all day on Saturdays. Like, we're good. We don't need to know exactly how many games someone's played and they played one more game than somebody else, like, as a deciding factor. Like, you know, we can figure out who we think the best players in the country are. So that's what I've just been trying to, you know, you know, that's how I feel about it. And I just think other people need to kind of get out of the socks of, you know, the best quarterback on a playoff team that's played whatever amount of games that arbitrarily in your head makes it feel fine.
Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Nicole, appreciate you joining us as always. Great stuff.
Absolutely. Talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Thanks, absolutely. That is an interesting point. And she's right. Like, trying to determine the Heisman this year with all of the different things going on, like, you're going to have to think outside of the box. Like, Justin Fields may end up playing like four games, five games, and I still think he should be a finalist. Maybe he should win it.
Yeah, but I agree with the outside-the-box stuff, too. I'm always looking for people like that. This is maybe a year it would work out, but it's also hard to overcome the talent of those guys who are quarterback in the top teams. It's going to be interesting. I hope they
– Better have Mac Jones in there.
Oh, believe me, I know.
Mac Jones, Kyle Trask.
He's on there right now, okay?
That's right. When we come back, some interesting news yesterday regarding – the college football NCAA – or college football, college basketball NCAA tournament, and maybe a single location for that tournament. We'll discuss that on the other side. But first, Joe, you've got a word from FanDuel.
I do, and as Nicole just said, we're watching football on the weekends. We're good. And if you've been doing that and seeing an ad for FanDuel Sportsbook, you may have said to yourself, is that legal in Tennessee? Well, yes, you bet it is. FanDuel Sportsbook is legal in Tennessee. And you can place your first bet on FanDuel Sportsbook risk-free. You can get up to $1,000 back if you don't win. No strings attached, any bet. If you win, just like any bet you win, you keep the cash. But if you lose, you get the whole bet back up to $1,000 in bonus site credit. So you can take another shot. I'll throw one out there, throwing out the Vols at Auburn. If you're not afraid of betting on the Vols, you shouldn't be afraid, because even the Vols getting 10 points right now at Auburn, even if they let you down again, you will get your money back. FanDuel Sportsbook, generous risk-free bets. That's only the beginning. They have a simple app. They have live betting on every game. They have game parlays. You can combine multiple bets from one game. You can have all kinds of prop bets within a game. And then when you get you win, you get your winnings in as little as 24 hours. So to claim that risk-free bet, download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Sign up with promo code Joe so they know I sent you. FanDuel Sportsbook. Promo code Joe, J-O-E. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Site credit is non-withdrawable. Expires 7 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. And for problem gambling support, call 800-889-9789.
We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. For the first time ever, Nashville will host an MLS playoff game. This Friday, Nashville SC taking on Inter Miami CF at Nissan Stadium at 8 p.m. for the Eastern Conference play-in match. Catch all the action on the official English-speaking flagship station, ESPN 94.9, starting with pregame coverage at 7:45. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, yesterday, some news in the world of college basketball. The NCAA announcing that they will hold the entire NCAA tournament in one location, and that location likely to be Indianapolis. They're in discussions right now to have it in Indy, and that makes sense to me, sending teams across the country and traveling all around through this right now and the pandemic and everything that comes with COVID-19, logistical challenges there, as well as the risk of spreading COVID and contracting it and then having to derail your tournament to some degree. So not overly surprised that they've chosen to go this route with the tourney, try to hold it in one location rather than having all these different regionals spread out across the country. And I think Indianapolis makes some sense. What were your thoughts when you saw this story yesterday?
Well, I've long been a proponent of Indianapolis being the Final Four site every year. I know that'll never happen, and I get why it moves around. Indianapolis is the perfect basketball tournament town, and I think it just works out the way it's all set up there for the Final Four. And so I think it's a good choice, but also – I think this is, given the year we're having, I don't know if you've ever been to Hinkle Fieldhouse, but of course Hinkle Fieldhouse is where Butler plays. It's where the movie Hoosiers?
Yep.
Hoosiers? Porth?
Yes.
Okay. Well, a hot streak with Porth. That's, of course, where it was filmed. Also, I got to play in a nice media game before the Final Four, what, 2015? In Hinkle. Pretty amazing place. And that would be amazing as a Final Four national championship game. Why not? I mean, you're not going to, right? I mean, it's very doubtful we're going to be in a situation where you're going to put thousands into anything for a sporting event.
Yeah,
by
get a little creative with it this year.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that would be great, and it makes sense. Am I correct that the women's tournament is San Antonio? Because that's another good spot for a.
I haven't seen that confirmed yet, but I believe that was the last discussion that I saw.
Yeah. So yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I'll tell you what, I'm not – right now, the way things are going, and it's just a big difference when you talk about big outdoor venues for football or soccer or baseball and indoor venues for coming up for basketball and hockey. I mean, I almost feel like college basketball should think right now about holding off. And I know some coaches out there are saying that. I think Rick Pitino, who's back in the game, by the way, at Iona, he's out there like, hey, just push it all back. I mean, I think they're going to get in some games, and they're going to have a whole bunch of games that they don't get in. And we're going to see teams in the NCAA tournament that play like have like 12 games played. You know, it's going to be wild. But the bubbling of the postseason to me is absolutely essential.
And ESPN's Jay Billis offered his thoughts on this yesterday after it was announced that the NCAA tournament going to be held in one location. Here's what Jay Billis had to say.
It's the smart move, Ryan. It's something that has been discussed for a while as to how to accommodate. Like, the NCAA has to have a tournament this year. Not having it last year and not having insurance for it and only getting about $250 million in insurance coverage, you have to have the tournament this year for the health of the sport. This is a big business.
So that's a great point brought up by Jay Billis there, because if you think back to March, and that seems like forever ago when all of this first started here in our country, the NCAA tournament not taking place. I mean, you're talking about a billion-dollar industry at that point that the NCAA doesn't have on its books. They can't afford that to happen again this year.
Yeah, everybody knew all along. Like, the 2021 NCAA tournament is happening one way or the other, but that's also where you've had all the luxury of time here, and you've got to make sure that, you know, that you do it right. I will say I'm a little disappointed with college basketball, given, you know, that Dan Gavitt is sort of like the de facto commissioner, and they had all this time, and I really thought they were going to have a little bit more of a cohesive regular season plan. It's also difficult. Different leagues, different standards, different financial situations. But it does feel still a little bit like, man, let's hope we can get this game in, and then we hope we can get that game in. And I thought we would see at least a few sort of mini bubbles set up to make sure you can get, you know, get X number of teams together, guarantee X number of games, do all the stuff you have to do to make sure everybody is tested and everything. Disappointing that it didn't work out that way, but the postseason, you can't mess with it. You cannot mess with that at all, and I'm confident they'll figure it out and have a, you know, they've got some blueprints to follow too, you know, the NBA and the NHL.
And to your point about maybe pushing the season back, like, I don't know what a difference that would make. Like, I'm not sure that if you push the season back from starting in November, late November, and you push it back to after Christmas or January, like, is the picture going to look all that different in terms of what the virus is doing right now? I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe, but
that's fair.
But I don't think you could sit here with certainty and say that that's going to be the case. And right now, I mean, college football, it's being put through the ringer right now. Every conference, SEC's dealt with it, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, the Big 12. I mean, there have been six games already postponed this week in college football, including Ole Miss and Texas A&M. So that's 2 weeks in a row, Texas A&M not going to be able to play this week. So, I mean, it's a mess right now in college football, and I think – if you think that's not going to happen to some degree in college basketball, I think we're fooling ourselves at this point. It's going
to
happen.
And to that point, if you do wait and hold off, and then what if it gets worse, and then now everyone has played six games? I mean, there's still an NCAA tournament committee that would like to choose the correct teams to play in the tournament.
Yes.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, you're getting in what you can get in. But that's why I liked the bubble ideas. Mm-hmm. I know there were some in Nashville that have been discussed about, let's get all these teams and let's get a bunch of games in. And it doesn't look – it's just, you know, kind of teams trying to do it more in a traditional way. But, yeah, I mean, college football, I mean, just like Nicole said last segment, it really is about – it's about getting to that playoff and having that playoff and, yes, the financial – aspect of it, and, you know, of course, the competition. I heard someone on Twitter, a sports writer, said the other day, like, why are we taking this season seriously at all in college football? Like, why are we even taking it seriously? Which I get. It's a mess, like you said. It's just games left and right, players missing, all that stuff. But, I mean, if you come down to a finish line where you have a whole Alabama team, a Clemson team, an Ohio State team, and they're in that, I mean, how is that any different than if this had never happened? If COVID had never happened and you had a regular 2020 season, those same teams with the same players are probably in the playoff, right?
Probably so.
So I count it.
So the process may be different, but the end result looking like it's going to be similar.
Yeah.
But don't forget Notre Dame. Got to throw them in there too.
Yeah, well, there's always some wacky fourth.
Yeah.
Cincinnati Bearcats. I'm looking at you, Porth.
That's right. About Oregon. They'll play two games.
Two Oregon. Oregon with a big comeback over Kayla Anderson's Wazoo Cougars.
I've watched a little bit of Pac-12 so far. The limited amount that's been out there, it's as bad as I thought it would be. So good to know we were right there.
Hey, I tell you what, I was glad for it being on the other night with the Michigan 49. You had Ole Miss, South Carolina, but you had Michigan, Wisconsin, 49. I was glad we had some Oregon Wazoo.
You were one of the few, I guess, that was glad. Hey, whatever. More football is good, I guess.
Right. Exactly.
When we come back, it was full-on damage control yesterday for the Vols to the surprise of nobody in Jeremy Pruitt's press conference. We'll react to what he said on the other side. Pretty interesting stuff. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back in Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, playing a little Keith Urban coming back in. You a big Keith Urban guy?
No. It sounded a little bit like the Knight Rider theme song. Then it got worse.
Don't hate on Keith Urban.
I mean, I'm not going to lie to you and say that I've listened to a lot, so I can say it's not good. But that 10 seconds of music. If that's the representation of Keith Urban, you know, I have my doubts.
I very much did that by design. I knew those opening 10 seconds you would really enjoy.
Are you a big Keith Urban fan?
He's okay. I like his
Orth?
Old. Typically, as is typically my answer with some of these guys and girls that have been around for a long time, their old stuff's a lot better. New age country music, with the exception of a couple of people. Not great.
And you agree, Porth?
Only in certain cases with him. I mean, with Keith Urban, I enjoyed the music.
Okay.
He has one of the best concerts I've ever gone to.
That's good. His old stuff's better. But, yeah.
By the way, my wife texted on the Maren Morris. The other performer was, is it Niall Horan?
That's not country.
He was in like some boy band or something. Yeah. Yeah, he was pretty bad. She was good, though. I like Maren Morris.
Maren Morris is awesome.
She's good. She was good. And that was country.
Yeah.
Well, I was listening to country music, right?
Yes.
I was at a concert.
It counts.
I liked it. So there you go. Like I said,
I think you would really enjoy
a different
Garth Brooks concert. It's a great concert.
I would definitely go to a Garth Brooks concert.
It's a great concert.
For sure. I mean, I like Garth Brooks, really.
Who doesn't?
So if that's, you know, so if that's liking country, I mean, but like to me, that's what, 30 years ago,
right? It's a long time.
The music I know of Garth Brooks is 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that counts, too. I'm a country fanatic. We had no idea.
Absolutely. Joe, we spent some time yesterday talking about Jeremy Pruitt and the state of this Tennessee coaching staff right now. We mentioned 8 assistant coaches declining to take pay cuts that the athletic department suggested and requested that they take. Now, being contract employees, they were given the choice. And they did not take him. The football coaches, the 8 assistants that we talked about, the only ones in the athletic department that did not take pay cuts. And obviously, that's been met with a lot of negative reaction both in Knoxville and nationally. Given the state of college athletics right now, Tennessee's athletic department projected to lose around $40 million this year. And it is interesting, like when you break down some of the numbers, like if you're making $1.6 million, I think it's a 10% cut. So, like, what's really the difference? Just, like, take the cut. If you're Jim Chaney, like, can you not
too
live?
Late.
Yeah, it's too late.
You look like a total dolt. Too late.
But we knew that was going to come up yesterday at Jeremy Pruitt's press conference, and it certainly did. And what Jeremy Pruitt had to say about it, I'm not sure if I feel better or if I feel worse. M5 of Vols fans, here's what Jeremy Pruitt had to say yesterday at his press conference.
You know, with this whole thing, the communication and, you know, during the middle of the season, I did not specifically sit down with any assistant coach. I knew that they were being approached about it. I didn't know the outcome until Blake wrote the article on Friday. So, and what Blake wrote was factual, right? So, but I do believe, like I said before, that the final story has not been written there yet. So it's a fluid situation, and with contracts, things change. So there'll be opportunities, you know, to make adjustments as we go through, as we move on.
So you hear that from Jeremy Pruitt, and he says that maybe the story on this isn't finished as of yet. And you know what that reads to me, Joe? That reads to me of, hey, we got caught doing this, and the reaction has been so negative that, hey, we're going to revisit this, and these guys are going to take this pay cut now that we've been shamed into doing so, which I'm not sure that makes me feel any better if I'm a Vols fan.
The only disagreement I'd have with you there is the pronoun. I don't think we is fair. I believe Pruitt when he said that he didn't know the outcome. Now, I think he should have been proactive and said, guys, we're all doing this, right? But it is. It's another person's money. So if you're the coach, I mean, he talked about how he and his wife wanted to do, you know, the gift to help the coaching staff, which, of course, Rick Barnes did that previously, and it's technically an NCAA violation. But, yes, it's very much when he says it's fluid, it's like, oh, I'm going to talk these guys into it. They're going to freaking give the money. I mean, when he talks about that quote, when he's like, you know, when I read Blake's story, Blake Topmeyer, who, again, great job for the Knoxville News Sentinel breaking the story. Like, I'm trying to imagine in my mind what Jeremy Pruitt was like at that moment as he read this.
Yeah.
If it was truly just completely out of the blue to him until that story came out, what kind of words came out of his mouth at that moment?
Probably not any that we can repeat here on this station. But I will say, like, some people I saw on Twitter yesterday heard Jeremy Pruitt say that, and like, well, there's no way you couldn't know. It's other people's money. Like, I'm not sure he was going around, like, saying, hey, did you take the pay cut? Hey, did you take the pay cut? Like, that probably did not come up in conversation, would be my guess.
I tend to believe him. But again, I do think it's fair to say, look, this is your staff. And again, this is, you're all public in all your money. This is a public university. You are public employees. And regardless of whether the money is separate in a Power 5 athletic department from the general fund, it's still, you know, you're public employees. And everybody knows what you make and what happens and things like that. So as a head coach, you got to be proactive and say, let's talk about this. We're all taking this, right? I mean, that's what you got to say. I mean, Jim Chaney, you can't give up a little bit of your $1.6 million. That's the one I just can't get over it with him. But obviously, this just looks terrible. And you think about, I'm trying to think too. So let's imagine they were having a good season. I think some fans probably wouldn't be making the deal out of this.
Oh, I think a lot wouldn't be.
But I'd be just as, to me, it'd be just as infuriating. This is separate from football. This is separate from
it
football.
It is, but
the football makes it worse.
The football has made this a lot worse. Like, if Jim Chaney, I'm just here to guarantee you, this is not just how Tennessee fans work. This is how a lot of fans work. If that offense was going out every week and lighting it up and putting up 35 points a game and they were, you know, 4-2 instead of 2-4, the reaction to this would be a lot different.
Don't you mess with that man's money. Yeah. That is that man's money. How dare you talk about his money?
That is exactly what the reaction would be. And again, I said it yesterday.
And like, I would be furious at those fans.
But that's exactly what would happen. And I have separated the football and this story because I don't think they belong together. But I think a lot of the negative reaction that we've seen is because of the football and how it's been so bad.
Because his performance as OC has been about what the pay cut is, you know? Like, it's about $160K worth of performance, you know, and that's just relative to how coaches get paid in big-time college football. Yeah, I agree. You're right. The reaction is very much amplified by the football, but it is separate. And I don't care if he was taking Jarrett Garantano to a Heisman ride right now for the undefeated Vols with this unbelievably complex and innovative offense, that it still would be infuriating that in COVID-19 that he would make this decision.
He may deserve the money then.
You'd be all right
with it. If he got Garantano to Heisman level, you can keep it.
That's true. If Garantano was a Heisman candidate right now, actually, they should – take the everyone else should then contribute more to change.
Yes,
be making about $3 million.
That may have been the greatest coaching accomplishment in college football history, if that was going to be the case. Which, by the way, looks like Garantano going to be the starter this week against Auburn, back on the practice field.
Well, it's not a surprise, is it?
No, but I think it's It was not met with positive reaction yesterday on social media. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. The, you're talking about the depth chart.
Oh, yeah.
Which doesn't necessarily mean anything.
No, but he did talk about the Pruitt, that Jarrett's, you know how he gets with the practice. And, oh, they're having some of the best practices they've had all year long. Well, that's great. Really appreciate that. Jeremy, thank you.
What if in a practice, a football practice, Jarrett Garantano could throw the ball and then Trevor Daniel could punt it back to him? Like, would that be the most incredible practice scene ever?
Yes.
Like, they might be the best practice players in all of
practice
football.
Practice warriors all the way around.
Vols, VFLs.
Yeah, VFLs forever. They were on the same team at one time together, Trevor Daniel and Jarrett Garantano. So I bet those practices were something to behold.
I mean, Tennessee probably has them in a vault right now. Hopefully they put them in the thing, you know, what do you call it, like the time capsule? Like, put the footage of Garantano and Daniel on the practice field together in a time capsule.
Maybe Justin Hunter can be attempting to catch the ball for Jarrett Garantano.
Ooh.
You know how quarterbacks always need that equipment manager next to them catching the ball so that, you know, they don't dislocate a finger or anything?
Yeah.
Maybe Justin Hunter, whose nickname here was Jag, just another guy, could be attempting to catch those punts or passes from Trevor Daniel.
Yeah.
That's too much good practice.
Yeah, you got to draw a line somewhere.
Keyword attempting.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't catch cold here.
Not very high on Justin Hunter over there.
Yeah.
Least favorite Titan of all time.
You got some Justin Hunter bitterness. And so you've got him below Vic Beasley on your least favorite Titan list.
Yes, because Justin Hunter was actually here for more than like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
He gave me more opportunities to hate him.
Okay. All right. Some interesting – before we move on to the next segment, some interesting news yesterday from Pruitt's press conference regarding Sean Schamberger. Not going to be back this year on the football team, focusing on academics the rest of the season, which tells me he's gone. He's going elsewhere. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I guess that's the right read.
Like, that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, we're 6 games in.
Does it mean he's close to failing out?
I don't know. Maybe.
And he's like, he's on the borderline. He's gonna, but that's, you know, Schamberger is a guy who I thought was going to be really important this year.
Me too.
And I don't know. I don't think he's been healthy out there, but he has not been impactful. I think like a lot of that secondary just sort of, it's not nearly what I thought it would be.
When we come back, perhaps a new low announced yesterday for the Tennessee football program, and specifically with their rivalry with the Doors. We'll discuss what that is on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, I got the bus and the band and a one-night stand waiting on us down the road. We're gonna load it. Tune into this weekend's NFL Game of the Week on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Gary Force Acura. This Sunday, my Green Bay Packers take on the Indianapolis Colts. Big ramifications for the Titans in that game. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. with a 3:25 p.m. kickoff. Is that little Craig Morgan? Who is that?
Luke Combs.
Is that Luke Combs?
It is.
That didn't sound like
Luke
Combs.
You're going to play country until I get upset today? Is that the idea?
Or until you come around to country music.
Ah, maybe. Okay. That one, I probably wouldn't listen to that by choice again.
Okay.
I like Maren Morris.
Okay. Maybe we'll play a little Maren Morris before the end of the show. Joe, perhaps a new low yesterday for the Tennessee Volunteers and their rivalry with Vanderbilt. Now, look, we know this. It's been a rough decade for the Vols. Vanderbilt's having a rough year right now, so we get it. I mean, it's not the most exciting of matchups in the SEC. But did we think it was bad enough with the Vols and the Doors that the game would be placed on the SEC Network alternate channel in a couple of weeks? I forgot that they had an alternate channel, but that's where we're going to have to go to find this nonsense in a couple of weeks when the Vols take on the Doors. The SEC Network alternate channel. I saw that news come out yesterday, Joe, and it was like someone punched me directly in the face. That's where the Vols are right now.
You didn't think it was kind of funny?
I thought it was a little funny.
It's kind of funny.
But it is also painful.
It's so pretty stinking funny.
So SEC Network started what year?
Oh, I don't know. 2012, 2013, 14.
I was going to say 14 or 15.
Yeah. Somewhere around there.
So there's no way. In fact, I would say this game probably rarely, if ever, has been just on the regular SEC Network, right? I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe last year.
Yeah, a few times.
I'd say the last few years it's probably ended up on SEC Network.
They've definitely been on ESPN a few times since I've been here. But yeah, you're right. Probably last year would have been but there's no way this has happened. Yeah, 2014, the SEC Network launch. So then that breaks me to at what point, when's the last less relevant game between these two? Oof. Whereas, you know, in the past, that may have been not even on TV at all, right? It's possible.
Long ago, yes. I don't know, Tennessee games typically.
The, 11:30 a.m. game on
Jefferson Pilot. Back in the good old days.
I love some Jefferson Pilot. Used to watch a lot of ACC.
Dave Neal's still around, by the way.
Didn't Jay Cutler beat Tennessee on Jefferson Pilot?
Yes, he did.
Jefferson Pilot. I didn't realize that was that recent that you guys had that. I watched that growing, in Virginia.
One of the
great
games,
ACC football.
One of the great finishes of all time on Jefferson Pilot. The Bluegrass Miracle, LSU, Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. Saban.
Younger Saban.
Yeah, young Saban.
But it's been a long time since this has been so, I guess, delegated to obscurity for the Vols.
When's the last time, if ever, that Tennessee had an SEC game end up on the alternate channel?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't know if
that's
ever happened.
I'm not sure that it has. Maybe it has. I don't know. But I don't remember a game being on the SEC alternate channel.
I mean, maybe an early season game against a directional school ended up on the alternate channel.
Well, that's not what you said. You said I thought you meant like an
conference
SEC game.
No, that's what I meant. Yeah, like a directional school game ended up on the alternate channel.
Like, I don't remember what channel the Georgia State game was on, but
I don't think it was SEC alternate.
I don't think it was either.
Yeah. I think there's a chance they've been on for one of those. Maybe. I mean, they've had some bad seasons.
Yeah.
End of the season game, but that's worth exploring. Like, has this ever happened to them at all? But then also, when's the last matchup? And we could certainly, I think look, Vanderbilt's going to be 0-7. Tennessee probably going to be 2-5. You're talking about 2-12 collective record between those teams. When's the last time it was that bad, if ever?
I'm not sure it's ever been that bad. I mean, Tennessee, in their history, has finished with 4 wins one time. They've always been 4 or better. They've never finished below that. And now here they are. And I realize this year is different. But 4 is probably take that right now if you're a Tennessee fan based on the rest of the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, normally they would have 11 games played. So, 2-5, I guess you take that to – that's like 4-7.
Yeah.
Right? So if you had a 4-7 – Tennessee versus a winless Vanderbilt, that would match up with this, or even like a 1-win Vanderbilt. So this is the right year for the SEC alternate network to get Tennessee Vanderbilt.
I would agree, and I also think, if they lose against Auburn on Saturday, which right now 10-point dogs in that game, like, are Tennessee fans going to want to watch the Vanderbilt game? Because it's like a no-win scenario. Like, if you beat Vanderbilt, okay, you've beaten Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt hasn't won a game all year. If you lose to Vanderbilt, which I think could happen, I'm not saying it will happen, but I think could happen. I mean, it's total wheels are off, the program is dead type of loss for Jeremy Pruitt. I'm not sure how many Vols fans are going to want to watch that game.
They will want to hate watch it.
Yeah.
Like, if it goes poorly this week, there's no glimmer of hope. I mean, like, if they're competitive and lose a game, there'll still be some fans who'd be like, okay, I mean, there's some – again, the sunshine blowers want to blow sunshine. But if it goes poorly this week and they just get thumped by Vanderbilt, the watching of that game will be hate watching. And honestly, I know this happened with Butch, and I've seen this with other fan bases and coaches. Some people start getting to like, lose this game and get out of there.
I was there with Butch. Absolutely was. Let's get him out. If it has
Georgia,
lose, go right
run
ahead.
Up that score, Georgia.
Go ahead. Yeah. I'm not there yet with Pruitt, but yeah, I mean, don't think he's the guy.
It's year 3. It's crazy.
Yeah. I can assure you that the gap is closing.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. The gap is closing between Tennessee and Vanderbilt.
Again?
Yeah.
Like, it was a – well, who's closing the gap?
I think Vandy's closing the gap right now.
I mean, Vanderbilt's the one that's
looking
been winning this, more times than not recently.
I think Tennessee's closing the gap the other way.
I know.
In terms of going backwards.
Yeah.
By the way, I looked it up on Wikipedia.
Ooh, very reliable.
this will be the seventh consecutive season of Tennessee Vanderbilt on SEC Network.
Okay.
Really?
Yes.
No, but not really. SEC Network also, alternate.
But all normal SEC Network.
Right. Correct.
Gosh, that all, one in here with Butch in 16?
Yep.
No kidding.
Also, okay. Also, this is the first SEC Network alternate game ever for the Tennessee Volunteers.
Go Balls, baby. Wow. Here we go. Come on.
New territory. New territory for the Vols. Nice research.
So when
it's
we
Wikipedia, asked, I mean, there's a little asterisk, I guess it goes with.
So when we asked the question, is this a new low for Tennessee? Actually is. This is a new low.
So even like, yeah, Georgia State or whatever garbage game, everybody plays a few of them.
Chattanooga.
Yeah. That still was like, nah, nah. Yeah. Now, I guess you could look at that and say, well, so actually Vanderbilt then is valued lower than like Chattanooga or Georgia State or whatever, but. Regardless,
I choose to blame Tennessee.
an historic moment for this rivalry.
Didn't that get you fired up if you're a Vols fan about the direction of this program? SEC Network alternate channel against the Vandy team that, as the weeks go by, I'm increasingly thinking is going to beat you. That is the one takeaway I had from college football this weekend when I watched Vanderbilt play Kentucky. It's like, man, if Ken Seals plays that way, they got a chance.
I mean,
they have a legitimate chance.
Keon Henry,
beat Tennessee.
Yeah, Keon Henry Brooks, he is a player. Now he's banged up. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, Florida is just going to be Florida, and
yeah, it's not going to be close.
We'll get you back for the Vols. So, what do you think the line would be on Tennessee? Like, if this weekend goes as normal, what's the Tennessee? You know, Tennessee loses by 10 at Auburn or something. Vanderbilt gets blown up by Florida. I mean, Florida, it's. That offense is going to have a field day. So what's the line? Vanderbilt, Tennessee.
I'd say Tennessee by 7.5, 8.5. Gosh, look, the line on Tennessee,
so
Texas A&M was Texas A&M 12. I mean, wouldn't you take Texas A&M if the line was 24 in that game? I would. I think there's a little bit of overvaluing Tennessee that's going on with the line sometimes. I think it'd be Tennessee by touchdown.
I think it'd be higher than that.
Could be.
I would too, but
I was going to guess in the 10 to 12 range.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would guess too, but
I mean, well, if you look at all the Vandy
lines.
That's
the case, take Vandy.
I mean, if you look at all the Vanderbilt lines, I mean, all of them have been double digits.
Yeah. They're getting better though. The defense may not be getting better, but the offense is getting better.
No, but yeah, I think their offense right now could absolutely do some things against Tennessee's defense. I have a hard time understanding how Tennessee would get stopped by Vanderbilt. But then again, Tennessee has stopped itself so well this year. You could do it against them too, I suppose.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just being a sunshine blower for Vanderbilt. I got too much confidence in them.
So you're more a sunshine blower for them than a doom and gloomer for the Vols.
Maybe so. Speaking of, let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Dan texts in, speaking of sunshine blowers, Rex Road, how about them Lions? You keep trying to get Dan off the bandwagon, and he won't do it. And they keep winning.
Yeah, no, I know. I had to hear about this Sunday, too. Like, it's the Washington football team, and they blew a 3-touchdown lead to the Washington football team. And then they got, like, a personal foul and kicked a 60-yard field goal to win.
Yeah.
Yay, Lions.
Does it count as a win if you beat a team that doesn't have a nickname?
No.
These will be vacated later after the season. These wins will be vacated.
Any win for the Lions is a win that counts. You got to take them however you can get them.
Yes, that's right. Scrounge them together. They're in the playoff picture still,
yeah,
Dan.
They are.
Restore the roar.
Yes, they are. When we come back, our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will join us. We'll get into all things NFL with him. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.